Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's January 29th, 2021 program. After the Holiday Farm Fire, what does it mean to rebuild? This is the 18th program of our 2020-2021 programming year. My name is Scott Coltrane, and I'm the City Club President. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Our programs are always available on our YouTube channel and our Facebook page, and are broadcast on public radio station KLCC FM 89.7 on Mondays at 7 p.m. We have both business and in-kind sponsors, including our diamond sponsors, Kaiser Permanente, University of Oregon, Peace Health, and Lane Community College, as well as generous support from the City of Eugene and from Lane County. Today's program is our second, focused on the Holiday Farm Fire. Just over 4 months ago, the Holiday Farm Fire consumed more than 173,000 acres of the McKenzie River Valley. For many residents, the past few months have been focused solely on survival, enduring the immediate aftermath of the fire, and simply making it through the winter. City Club presented a first program on the Holiday Farm Fire in November with speakers from the McKenzie River Trust, United Way of Lane County, and the U.S. Forest Service Research Department. For the second City Club program on the fire, we turn our attention to recovery. What does it mean to rebuild after a disaster of this scale in a place like this? Community members and local organizations are adapting to multi-year recovery timelines. Local agencies are working to support recovery and mitigate future disasters amidst a radically altered, unsettled landscape. Home to several hundred Valley residents, the McKenzie River is also the sole source of water for over 200,000 area residents. Our speakers today include Tim Lawy of the McKenzie Community Development Corporation, Heather Buck, East Lane County Commissioner, Janine Parisi from the Eugene Water and Electric Board. Their biographies can be found on our website at cityclubofeugene.org. Our new format includes a question and answer period with City Club members via Zoom. I would like to thank Karin Knudsen for coordinating today's program.
Thank you, Scott, and welcome City Club members and listeners to today's program. I'm Karin Knudsen, a member of City Club's program committee. We'll get started in just one moment with our three speakers for today in our second program, talking about the Holiday Farm Fire. But I first wanted to just offer a warning to listeners that we will be discussing that natural disaster and the traumatic events of that disaster and following it openly in this City Club program. So please bear that in mind as you're listening and take that into account if you have younger listeners or are experiencing trauma related to this event. And with that, I will hand it off to Tim Lawy, president of the McKenzie Community Development Corporation, as our first speaker.
My name is Tim Lawy, and I'm the president of the McKenzie Community Development Corporation. We also lost our home and our cottage, which was a separate building in the fire. So I would just say that at almost 70 years of age, we never expected to be in a circumstance where we lost almost everything materially, but most important, those things that had meaning to us that cannot be replaced. And I know a lot of people in the community who had the same experience, pretty much everyone in the community who lost their homes or they were significantly damaged. The people that live up there, and many of those who were the victims of this fire, consider the McKenzie to be home and will go back because it's an extraordinary landscape. It's unique in the world, and it has the best water on earth. I'm hoping that we are able to accommodate that in the process of rebuilding. But that's going to take some time. I guess I would say the community is coming to grips with a few things right about now. We were informed that there's a trajectory to recovery for both individual and communities in any kind of natural disaster, whether it's a wildfire, a flood, an earthquake, a hurricane. And that is for the first 2 or 3 months, people feel a sense of community cohesion because what happens is CNN is there, The Times is there, FEMA is there, and others, and they feel like people have had their back. They're also in a state of shock. After that period, there's about 3 months where spirits fall, precipitously fall, because people are beginning to evaluate their loss. and recognize that there aren't a lot of steps forward that aren't going to be difficult and hard on them. So with that, I think that's a pretty good sense of our individual experience with it. It's hard for people to understand, and it's hard for the people who have had it to try and explain it. And the best thing I could recommend to people, if you're able to do it, is drive through the fire area, because that can give you a sense of what it's like on a deeper level than can just be explained in words. With that, I'm going to hand this off to my county commissioner, and who's the East Lane commissioner, Heather Buck, who has done an extraordinary job in the valley since the fire.
Thank you so much, Tim. Thank you, City Club members, for having us today and keeping this topic on your minds. We will need to engage to help this community for many years to come. My name is Heather Buck. I'm Lane County Commissioner for District 5, in which the Holiday Farm fire occurred. On the day of the fire, our emergency manager had warned and put an alert out to Lane County employees and sheriffs and other agencies regarding the high wind potential of that evening. So the county was on alert. Of course, we didn't know what was in store, but we wanted to be as prepared as possible just in case. And sure enough, that was necessary that evening. In the immediate moment and subsequent aftermath, the county engaged a second EOC, Emergency Operations Center. If you recall, we already had one emergency operations center up because of the coronavirus pandemic that had consumed most of us by then, and all of our minds were on coronavirus. In an instant, our minds were on the devastating wildfire and getting lives out of the incoming path of fire that was still going for several days. That emergency operations center was integral in initially assessing and getting people safe. It was an unprecedented and unparalleled interagency response from those in the fire themselves all the way up to the highest level of government. We were not the only ones engulfed in fire that evening. So everybody's minds and energy was focused on saving lives that evening and several days after. In that emergency operations center, we had been preparing at the county level for a formal operations center ever since Snowmageddon a year or two before. And so we were getting prepared more and more at the county and how to respond to emergencies. And right when we were about to wrap up a formal unveiling of our emergency operations, the Holiday Farm fire hit. So I'm thankful for that energy and resources that went into that so that we had everything ready at hand to go. Since that evening and subsequent days following, I was stationed at the incident command post in the Springfield schools with all the governmental agencies, National Guard, Forest Service, et cetera, who were all responding. And the EOC was made up of other Lane County staff and our sheriff's office with their partners. We still have many, many obstacles and needs in front of us in order to recover for that area. We have needs for housing. We have needs for support for rebuilding. And that includes land use issues, the actual process of going through insurance claims, which is a whole world in and of itself, and then being able to walk through the process of rebuilding when we're also in the midst of working with state agencies on how to clean up hazmat materials. What do we do with all the trees that are damaged and know will come down at some point? And then also the ash and debris cleanup. And how do we do this as fast as humanly possible at a scale where we're also competing against resources with other areas of the state who are going through the exact same thing at the exact same time? And really wanting to move towards the next stage in actual rebuilding. We've got a lot of staff at the county that has been working on this ever since that evening. The county is the one agency that will be there from the very beginning throughout to the very end of recovery as other agencies with technical support and expertise come and go to help us in each phase. I'm proud to be there for residents in that area and continue to do outreach and be at as many meetings, Zoom may they be, or in person if it's safe and possible. Looking ahead, we have a new recovery coordinator for that area that's come on board. We are hiring 3 dedicated land use planners specific for the recovery of that area. You may have also heard that we were able to add some dedicated deputy patrols to that area. We recently heard that we were accepted for the FEMA housing mission to help with additional housing resources upriver so people can rebuild in the area in which they're from. That was an appeal process that was painstakingly challenging, but finally came through with the help of our federal delegation, in particular Congressman DeFazio, Senator Merkley, and Senator Wyden. I thank them very much. I'm sure there'll be questions later more on housing and other issues, including rural broadband, which is another big area where we need additional help and resources to help people want to move back safely. With that, I will pass this on to Janine Parisi from eWeb.
Thank you, Commissioner Buck. I'm Janine Parisi. I work for eWeb, and I'm here representing the McKenzie Watershed Recovery Task Force. And just wanted to start by thanking Commissioner Buck and Tim Lowry for their leadership. We've gotten a chance to know each other and work closely over these past couple of months, and it's been an extraordinary effort. I've been thinking about the question before us at City Club of what it means to rebuild. And it occurs to me that you have to have a solid understanding of what was lost. We've just experienced one of the state's largest wildfires in the middle of the McKenzie watershed. And it's just difficult to quantify the scale and magnitude of devastation. You know, Tim just shared this deep sense of loss from the fire victim perspective. And if you take that drive up 126, as he suggested, it really will send shockwaves through you. So I'm not sure we can fully grasp the reverberations of a fire this large and hot to our upriver communities, the economy, the McKenzie Water River, the McKenzie River watershed that is so vital to the 200,000 people that depend on it for drinking water. I could give you a few stats from the UF fire response to help paint the picture. You know, we've had to remove and replace 223 power poles. It took nearly 80,000 feet of electric wire to restore service to our upriver customers. But this really just scratches the surface of the rebuild effort. As thousands of hazard trees have been removed, there's a lot more to still come out. Residents are just now making that decision whether to rebuild or start over somewhere else. So we're still taking inventory and we're gathering the resolve for a long recovery ahead. I can tell you that eWeb decided to take early action to protect water quality. Our Board of Commissioners provided immediate funding, just over $1 million to get boots on the ground to render assistance to landowners while keeping toxic ash and hazardous materials from entering the river. So that in a matter of weeks, not months, we were able to contact 100 property owners with land along the river whose structures were destroyed. With their permission, our contractors pulled fire damaged material up and away from the river. We secured those materials under tarps and we put down erosion control measures. Time is of the essence to stabilize those properties so that when the rains came, and we knew they would, the debris and toxic ash could be kept out of the river. We were also able to use those board approved dollars to pivot the existing Pure Water Partnership, the PWP. This is a coalition including eWeb, the McKenzie Watershed Council, the East Lane Soil and Water Conservation District, and the McKenzie River Trust, and that's a mouthful to get out. This coalition has been offering burn assessments and support to landowners to identify hazard trees, to help with mulching, hydroseeding, silt fencing, all in order to stabilize their properties and help them get through this winter. The PWP partnerships completed almost 25 burn assessments and help property owners with erosion control measures on about half of those sites so far. eWeb's worked with our federal partners to get additional water quality monitoring equipment installed upriver. This equipment will alert us to high flows and sediment in the river hours before the water heads downstream, so we can adjust treatment practices at Hayden Bridge Filtration Plant if necessary. This helps make sure that our customers in town continue to have safe, high quality drinking water despite the new threats posed by this fire. And this is at the heart of our work, the reason we're so heavily engaged in restoration activities in the fire zone, even though most of our customers are in town, because our prime directive at EWEB is to provide reliable, safe drinking water to our community. And that means protecting water at the source, miles upstream from town and all the way down to the taps at your homes and businesses. So I'll turn from the emergency response last year to those immediate actions to what we're doing for 2021. And the PWP partners continue the burn assessments and putting down erosion control measures. And now we are ready to begin revegetation efforts on some 100 acres of priority riparian properties with the help of 180,000 native plants provided to us through the Bonneville Environmental Foundation. We'll be monitoring the effectiveness of measures already installed throughout the spring, as well as be on the lookout for outbreaks of invasive weeds, which left unchecked can be calamitous to riparian habitats. We're applying for grants through FEMA. We're reaching out to our state partners, all to try to secure funding to conduct large-scale floodplain restoration projects targeted towards those heavily burned portions of the watershed, including Finn Rock, which is managed by the Mackenzie River Trust, and Gates and Quartz Creeks. We're also looking at more ways to support homeowners who plan to rebuild with EWEB incentives or loans. The programs under development include expansion of incentives for septic system repairs and improvements, and financial support to underground electric service lines to those fire-damaged homes. These new programs supplement the portfolio of energy efficiency programs that are already available to all EWEB customers. There's numerous challenges ahead, as you can imagine. There's no such thing as easy money. These grants are competitive, and sadly, the timing for most of them is such that even if our applications are successful, we won't have money in hand until mid-2022 at the earliest. This means we need to weather two more rainy Oregon winters without significant federal support for our restoration work. If we wait for federal help, it may be too late for us to work with landowners who are getting ready to rebuild now. They will have already made those critical site planning and home design decisions. There's also a critical shortage of nursery stock for revegetation efforts. Between the California and Northwest wildfires, there's an unprecedented demand for planting materials, resulting in severe shortages, and that issue is not going to be easily remedied. So there's challenges ahead of us, but there's also opportunities. So I've been thinking about what could it look like to build back stronger and smarter, to lend support to the rebuilding effort in ways that are meaningful and sustaining to benefit future generations, and to make those investments so that the Mackenzie River remains a wild and pure source of drinking water, and that the recreation, the tourism, the habitat, and the other benefits continue to flow our way. EWEB has been working hard with our partners to consider just this. What if rebuilding stronger included homes that are built in materials and landscaped to be more wildfire resistant? What if newly built homes are sited back away from the river's edge so they are less prone to future flooding events and create more space to replant river frontage with native riparian friendly trees, shrubs, and grasses? If we had access to funds so that landowners are willing and fairly compensated, we could transition properties of highly environmental value to the stewardship of the Mackenzie River Trust. And I'm thinking especially of those home sites that are now at higher risk for erosion and flooding, and convert those more risky areas to naturalized greenways for the benefit of the river and for water quality. What if we could build a modern, redundant, multi-hazard alert system that signaled risk of wildfire, landslide, and earthquakes to residents and highway travelers so people had time to get out of harm's way? If we could replant this 126 right away in the scorched timberlands that are near fish-bearing streams with thousands of native mixed species plants, not just to restore the scenic corridor we hold dear, but with an eye towards carbon sequestration benefits that generate revenue through carbon offset markets, as well as create local jobs and support healthy forests. And lastly, what if we expanded nursery capacity now to grow trees and jobs in our rural communities for a multi-year restoration effort ahead of us? So I'd say that these are lots of multi-million dollar what ifs. It's going to take a lot of commitment investment at the state and federal levels. EWEB's ready to work with our partners like the county, the Mackenzie CDC, our PWP coalition, philanthropic organizations, and others to rebuild stronger and smarter. We've spent the last 5 years holding our water rates stable, and we're very proud of this at EWEB, but we recognize that what lies ahead is a once-in-generation opportunity to act boldly to protect and preserve the Mackenzie watershed. And that for every dollar we invest locally, we may be able to leverage four more towards a more resilient watershed while supporting economic recovery. The result could be a model for the state and perhaps the Northwest even. The challenge of whether to act now or wait for potential federal funding to arrive will be a key part of next week's EWEB board meeting as commissioners consider the appropriate level of investment EWEB should make towards these efforts. Rebuilding smarter and stronger, it's not going to be easy by any stretch of the imagination, but there's cause for optimism because we do have that relationship and infrastructure needed to carry us into the future. Because we have visionaries who are thinking expansively, leaders who are planning strategically and with heart, and doers that are ready to get the work done now. And because many of you know that without the pure and bountiful Mackenzie, we are, as Barry Lopez said, somehow a little bit less. So I'm going to stop there and turn it back to Tim Lowy.
Thank you, Janine. Janine and I have been acquainted for almost 20 years, and she does a great job of explaining what needs to be done and what the issues are. So as I said at the beginning, I am president of the Mackenzie Community Development Corporation, which is a nonprofit serving what we call our 60-mile Main Street from the Springfield Urban Growth Boundary up to Clear Lake. Our mission is to support the community, environmental, and economic aspects of life in the Mackenzie, and we take it very seriously. Those three elements cannot be separated. They work together, and you really can't respond, transition, recover, or rebuild without paying attention to all three of them at the same time. We have been doing that since the day after Labor Day. The county and the community and other agencies, state, federal, and local, like EWEB, have been spectacular. Everybody has been committed to doing what they can, when they can, and they've gone over all expectations, gone over the top to help the people, to help the environment, and to help the economy up that is suffering a great deal from this. I can't say enough about it. Not just Lane County, but the state of Oregon through its different agencies and EWEB. They all take a piece, they all coordinate very well. We try and bring them a local perspective, and we try and leverage opportunities for local nonprofits, businesses, and other agencies like the school district up there. Ours is a communication role and an advisory role, and we're pleased, but we're learning every day. Those partnerships that we have and we're going to need are the best thing that we can do to accelerate this process. We need to be nimble, we need to be flexible, and we need to recognize that the conditions are fluid and changing all the time. And one size does not fit all. You're going to have to do what needs to be done at the time. And that has a lot to do with communication. Not only communications between agencies and other stakeholders, but communications with the community. We have two organizers, community organizers, on the ground up there, both of whom live up there and have lived up there. And of all the things we do, that is one of the most effective because it helps people one-on-one on issues like insurance, on issues like housing, on issues like debris removal. We couldn't do it without them, and we couldn't do it without our partners. So I want to talk a little bit about what I mentioned before in the terms of people's experience. We're in a period where people's spirits decline because they're evaluating their loss and they're trying to look forward in a circumstance they never expected. And that will stay, it probably by the spring, it will get down to a low level and then level off. And that will stay with us for 9 or 10 months before we start to come back. There will be triggering events. There will be things in families and communities that will be disheartening, but there will also be things that bring people back. What we've been doing with the county and others is trying to bend that curve, if you will, so that it doesn't go down as far or as fast as it might. Because the biggest thing we're going to need in the long term, but in the short term, is a sense of hope and a sense of partnership. Heather mentioned the snowpocalypse. That was a natural calamity that we had upriver that lasted for 10 days, where the major portion of the river was without water because there was no power, and without communications because there was no cell coverage. People were isolated. Resident average up there in terms of age probably skews toward the middle 60s, just because they've lived there for years and they don't want to live anywhere else. But people got the medications, people got firewood, people got food if they were short on it, because neighbors helped neighbors, friends helped friends, and family helped family. The Holiday Farm fire was on a level far beyond that. It was unexpected. It happened in a heartbeat. It went from 30 acres on Labor Day night to 32,000 acres 12 hours later. But neighbors help neighbors, people help people, friends help friends, family help family, and we only had one fatality. There are stories probably that I couldn't count of people stopping to check on their neighbors when as they were going down the highway and picking them up. One of our community organizers, who happens to live in Blue River, heard about the nature of the fire and how fast it was moving at about 11 o'clock at night. The power had gone off sometime before, so people went to bed. Melanie, who has some disabilities, went all through that community pounding on doors and waking people up. And there's no exaggeration in saying that she saved lives that night, more than a few. I know of another story where an 82-year-old man was going down the river and the evacuation and turned around and came back to check on a 102-year-old woman, picked her up and took her out. Both of them lost their homes. So I would say that it's a community that trusts each other and that works with each other. They're a little bit reluctant to work with outsiders sometimes, but in this case, people appreciate it, although they get a little frustrated. So the last question is, you know, where are we now? Where will we be? And what's the timeline of recovery? Well, there are three phases to it. There's response, there's recovery, and then there's rebuild. We've been in response since the day after the fire, as all our partners and the community itself. And that will probably continue, though it's winding down a little bit into March, in terms of providing people what they need, in terms of essentials, food, housing, et cetera. We've had community relief centers set up, but we're also beginning the recovery phase. That will likely go on for 12 months or so. And that is what Janine was talking about and Heather talking about as well, is how do you identify what needs to be done in a circumstance and help get those there at the local, county, state, and federal level, as well as interagency with nonprofits and community members. The rebuild portion of that will probably start in 2022 and go on for 24 to 36 months. So for ourselves and for the people living in the valley and for the people, the strategic partners we have, we're going to be at this for years to come. And we anticipate that and we expect that. And we're working together to try and address issues as they come up. But as I said before, all of us need to be nimble. All of us need to be flexible. And all of us need to be able to adapt almost on a moment's notice. Where we are now is in recovery and finishing response. People can help by going to our particular website, which is mckinseyrecovery.org, where we have updated information almost daily. We have links to information and other things, and we have pages for different community organizations and businesses where people can see what's going on and help if they wish. We're trying to help people out all together throughout the whole fire area and throughout the valley, because we're one community. And we'll continue to do that. We'll let people know what we need and others know. But more than anything, we need hope. People need hope because there's been a sense of despair. And because of the nature of the McKinsey, I see that emerging. That same partnership of people, family, friends, and neighbors helps people get through what's a dark time. And I think we've succeeded in not falling as far or as fast as we could in terms of community spirit. So I'll leave it there and turn it back over to Karen for the next phase.
Thank you, Tim Lowy, Commissioner Heather Buck, and Janina Parisi for your thoughtful comments about what has been happening up the McKinsey and the response and recovery process following the Holiday Farm fire. We're going to kick off our Q&A portion of the City Club program with the first question and then some questions from City Club members and board members who are in attendance today. To begin, and hearkening back a little bit to our first City Club program on the Holiday Farm fire at the end of 2020, this fire was described as a total stand replacement fire, a relatively uncommon occurrence in the Western Cascades until now. That is a type of fire that kills all or nearly all of the trees in the affected area and will transform certainly the experience of the McKinsey River for people who drive up 126 and see what has happened there. If you take that drive, you still see right now full logging trucks taking charred trees out of the valley and out of the affected area. Janine and Tim, could you answer a question about the stability of the affected areas? And is it stable now? Is the landscape stabilized solving the fire or following the fire? Or are we still in the process of addressing that basic foundational context?
Well, I'm going to put Janine on the spot because she has more knowledge about this. I'm happy to weigh in when she's done.
Yeah, I'm not a forestry expert, so I have to just caveat there. I'd say the landscape's still very much in flux. What I've heard from other experts from other fire experiences is that the landscape will be in flux for several years after fire. So, you know, what we're just seeing the beginning of what it could be like for the next several years. It's important to know that the Mackenzie watershed is only 30% is in public ownership. So there's a relative minority of public Forest Service and BLM land. The majority of that forestry there is in private ownership. So nature is resilient. And so those public lands will recover on their own over time. I'd say that the private forestry area is, you know, maybe creates an opportunity for us because maybe some of those properties have a little bit less value for timber production, which means there may be opportunities to put some of those properties to other uses that can have more of a watershed recovery benefit. The watershed is our first line and barrier protection for clean water downstream. So we're very interested in opportunities to look at how we can support replanting and revegetation efforts for the benefit of the watershed.
So I just make a couple of comments to add to that. The landscape is going to be different up to Mackenzie. It will be considerably more open. There will be considerably more sun. But the river is still there, which is encouraging for pretty much everybody who's in the valley and those who come through the valley. Not the whole valley was burned. It's only about a 30-mile section from below Vida up to about 5 miles east of Blue River. In terms of the trees that are coming out, a lot of them are on private ground, and it may seem like it's an accelerated cut, and to some degree it is, because after about 8 months, stands of timber start to lose their mercantile value because of decay. So we can be aware of that. But I would also say that some of the private landowners, one major one in particular, has agreed that for trees that are less than 15 years old, they will not pull them out, they will not harvest them, they will leave them there. And when they will replant inside the spacing of a tree. So if two trees are 10 feet apart, they'll plant at 5 feet on either side, which will help green things up. The deciduous trees and the undergrowth and the native grasses will start to green up as early as next spring. But we're in it for a long time to come. I expect the valley, in terms of environmental recovery, will happen pretty quickly because nature, the life force, is really strong. And it won't be the same in my lifetime, but it won't be a devastated area either for very long.
And now a question from Andrew on City Club's program committee.
Thank you very much. And thank you everyone for your work and for your testimonials. And I'm sorry personally for everything that's been lost. My question is a simple one. What can we do to help? Many of us live outside the fire zone. We experience the smoke, but we haven't experienced the aftermath. But we really want to help our neighbors to the east. What should we be thinking about and what concrete things can we do? Thanks.
And Commissioner Buck and Janine, if you wouldn't mind fielding that question.
Thank you for the question. One of them is having these kinds of conversations. What people will feel is in the immediate aftermath, for several months, they get a lot of attention. And then people move on to other more high profile news that comes out every day. Yet these people are going to be in recovery for years and years. They will continually need our support and advocacy for resources for their region. Part of that in my role is to support our legislators when they are in our session now for support for wildfire recovery programs. That's where I will be spending a great deal of my efforts in this legislative session in order to bring those resources home and be able to then work with on-the-ground teams such as Mackenzie, CDC, Locals for Locals and all those people on the ground who need those resources. Part of that is housing resources, which we touched on earlier a little bit. These people need long-term homes. They're still in hotels. Some are trying to seek temporary transitional housing, which our FEMA housing mission will help, as well as our program called Project Turnkey, which is where we try to acquire a standing hotel, motel, or apartment complex for people who don't necessarily have a home to go back to or were tenants. So we will be working closely on how the county can support our legislators and those resources. And I'll leave it up to Janine or Tim to talk about their expertise.
I would just add real quickly that I appreciate the question. There are a couple long established organizations that are very active upriver right now. One is the United Way, and they've been fantastic at gathering resources from our community, local dollars, and then getting those back out into the hands of people doing work on the ground and supporting the community. And I'd say the McKenzie River Trust is another fantastic organization that will be working in lockstep with EWEB in our restoration work. And both of those entities, if folks can reach out to them and see how they can support, whether it's volunteering their time or volunteering some extra money would be greatly appreciated. It's gonna take us all, really, a multilateral effort. And the great thing about locals' dollars is that we have more control over how they're used. So really appreciate that.
So I just make a few comments. The question really was, how can people help who don't live in the Valley who are not part of the geography? Well, you probably know people that are, or who do. Listen to them, be sympathetic to them. It's kind of hard to be empathetic with them because, as I tell people when they say, I can't imagine, we tell them, we think at least that they're right. They can't imagine because I couldn't have imagined it before. And when they mention that, well, at least we're safe, I think to myself, well, we don't feel particularly safe after that experience. But so be supportive to the friends and neighbors, just as much as you can. Listen. Donate to causes that you believe in. United Way has a platform set up for funding to the recovery of the wildfire. There are also organizations, nonprofits, and others that will accept funding. Heather mentioned neighbors helping neighbors or locals helping locals. They're great. All of it, there are a lot of sites, a lot of ways to help. The guides are helping, because the more people can make it seem like it's coming back, there's some sense of normalcy, the better they'll feel. So, working with people who are in the Valley for outdoor recreation, for guides, for outfitters, it all doesn't have to happen within the fire zone itself. It can also happen both upriver and downriver from that zone. And that makes a big difference. On our website, we have a series of links to different organizations where you can hit a PayPal button and the funds go directly to them. They don't hit our books at all, which for a variety of reasons we think is a good strategy. So just pay attention, keep it in your minds, visit every once in a while because you'll see how it's coming back, and tell your neighbors, because as Heather said, this drops out of the news cycle pretty quickly, and people, if they're not visiting, they don't remember.
Thank you. Following on a few of those comments, a few questions about housing. And the first will be one question that was submitted that I'll share, and then a follow-up question from Eric Richardson with NAACP Eugene Springfield. Commissioner Buck, you mentioned the housing mission and FEMA's support of that and the work that Representative DeFazio did to help to bring that ask forward and see it through. Could you tell us more about what that support will make possible in the recovery effort?
The FEMA housing mission specifically will bring a variety of tools to find housing upriver for folks. We were originally not approved for the housing mission because they determined that there was enough housing in the Metro Center to accommodate everybody. Part of our appeal specifically was people want to return to their homes up the McKenzie. The Metro Center is not the McKenzie area, and the commute can be dangerous this time of year. So in our appeal, we specifically were trying to find properties upriver so people could relocate and bring their families back, specifically going back to the McKinsey School, who's lost so many of their students because of this fire. They've lost support and a tax base for the local fire department as a result of this. So in that appeal process, we seemingly have convinced them that yes, that is the case. So let's find a way in order to either fix up homes that are still there that can be fixable. Perhaps if there's enough land on a lot that we could add some pads and bring some housing up there, that could be in the form of RVs or locally built mobile home buildings. If there's also a stick built on that property, what do we need to do in any upgrades so that it could accommodate folks to live? FEMA has identified folks that are eligible to get that assistance. And so we're working very close with them on ensuring a transition. We don't yet have a guideline on how much time it will take to do that. I'm hoping within a month or two, we will be able to get those housing units on the ground in the McKinsey area and families back home.
Thank you. And Eric with NAACP Eugene Springfield, a follow-up question.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Buck. I appreciate you guys really pushing that appeal on behalf of folks who really need that help up there and who want to really feel a sense of normalcy and getting back to where they were. I know I also work with the United Way, so we understand that we're really looking at supporting those families and those most vulnerable in our community. And understand that I have two questions. One was just around the percentage of renters as opposed to property homeowners in the corridor and what that looks like as far as going forward when we move forward and bringing people back and helping the school district survive. This is the percentage of that. And then just talk about how do we envision the jobs that were lost? Because I imagine the people who lived there, they didn't all come into the Metro Center to work, and that there were viable avenues for them to live and work in the corridor. And I'm just wondering, is there going to be a concerted effort to change that model around business and the renters and the workers who lived in that area? We personally have been seeing the refugees come out of the area, something I call them refugees, because they are still in hotels, some of them. And we have been paying gas money to get people back and forth for some folks here at the office. So I just know that's a difficult thing, and how we're going to create that sustainability for them going forward as renters who do want to go back.
Well, Eric, I'll take a shot at both of those. One, in terms of the rental population up there, I don't think it's as large as it is in Eugene Springfield, but it's not insignificant. Most of the renters up there are renting from people who already live up there. And so there's a sense of compassion and caring about that. But the truth is, particularly in populations who are older and don't have the energy to rebuild in their 60s or 70s, because as anybody knows, it's a hard process. I mean, it's not easy. They're not rebuilding for the places that people were renting. And we don't know, it's too early to tell how much it will be there. But what Heather's talking about in terms of the housing mission and other work that's being done up there, that's important, because transitional housing up there may last as long as 2 years. And it will be developed by Homes for Good, the county's housing authority, and other housing agencies as well as private parties for years to come. So I'm optimistic about that. Part of the reason I'm optimistic is because people in that valley care so much for other people in that valley, and they'll try and find ways. In the terms of people coming back, there are people coming back. Some of them are living in campers, some of them are living in trailers, some of them are living in tents because they want to get back upriver as soon as they can. As I said before, our mission is to support the community well-being and to foster and support the economy and the environment, which can't be separated up there because a lot of our economy is based on outdoor recreational activities. There's a phrase out there, build back better. And I fully agree with that, because the economy that is up there is, while people do the best they can in the terms of supplying jobs, those jobs are seasonal and often without benefits and aren't of the highest pay. So Heather and I have talked, as others have, about any economy being needing infrastructure to do that. In the McKinsey, there's a problem with aging septic systems, so there are some sanitary options that we could use. We're trying that in Blue River. High-speed internet is absolutely critical, and I mean ultra-high speed, because I think we've learned through COVID that people can work remotely. And if they can work remotely, why would they not want to work in one of the most beautiful places on earth? And so we'll be looking toward that. And then underground power and other elements, just getting the basic in water systems, getting the basic infrastructure back up to where it is, so there's a platform for the economy to grow back into. So those are the comments I would say about that. We need very much to find a place for families to live up there. That's part of the decline of the student population, but there's really not sufficient employment for all the families to stay up there. And that's important.
So Mary Layton from City Club's Program Committee, please go ahead.
Well, this kind of builds on returning home. I've had the great good fortune of living twice in very rural areas, once 45 minutes up a gravel road and another time out and way out in the Coast Range. And both times I would say that we benefited in the creativity of our housing from the distance between us and the inspector. We lived in beautiful places and made things work. And so, we would not have been happy to have somebody now thinking they had a vote on the creativity versus conventionality of arrangements. And I mean, how are people gonna deal with this, that their beautiful place with a beautiful view close to the river can't be rebuilt on? I don't know if there's an answer, but I keep thinking, what's going to happen when the builder meets the permit giver? I mean, this is hard times for some people. How are they thinking about that now? How are they dealing with it?
Mm-hmm. Heather, you want to take a shot at that?
Sure. And just as a follow-up on the previous question that I put in the chat for folks, FEMA has 1,766 valid registrations for assistance. 883 were homeowners and 880 were renters. So it's pretty evenly split there. To your question, Mary, regarding permitting and placement of new homes, we have been discussing that a great deal, not only at the board level, but in the planning department. We had extensive conversations about how do we help homeowners rebuild when it was no fault of their own, and now they're being required to go through this process. Many homes up there are older, built 50s, 60s, under very different guidelines than what we have currently in place for new builds. It was really important to the board and myself that people could rebuild specifically in this same spot that they had their home originally, because again, it's no fault of their own that this situation occurred and their house is no longer there. So we have put those things in place, and we're talking through various scenarios for as people come in and say, well, what about this specific issue for my property, which might be very different from another person's property in a different zoning over here. And it's almost a case-by-case issue, and we're required by state law to follow the land use rules that the state has put in place. Where we can, the board has discussed items in which we may be able to accommodate, but we still have to keep in mind safety, and we still have to keep in mind our economic and wildland issues that will continue. How do we keep our river safe and still rebuild and make it affordable for people? One thing that people are finding out that they were not as insured as much as they thought they were. People were, in some cases, woefully uninsured, and in many, many more cases, not insured at all, and have no resources to rebuild or find accommodation elsewhere. And for those folks, we have assigned case managers from the county to help assist them in finding as many resources as possible.
A closing question for the three of you, and this follows exactly on that theme, Commissioner Buck. There's a saying among emergency management, emergency response, that all disasters are local. And knowing what you know now about this type of a disaster, what do you think that we should be doing locally to prepare for something similar in the future? Not necessarily a wildfire, perhaps a wildfire, but it could be extensive flooding. It could be an earthquake that would generate all of the same challenges of structural integrity and occupation of existing structures and rebuilding challenges and supply chain challenges, as what you were describing. What do you wish that we would think about and do differently or be prepared for in the future? First, Commissioner Buck, and then Janine Parisi, and then Tim Lowey.
I would like to say that we need a lot more emergency management resources. We had started a lot of coordination efforts in our community after Snowmageddon occurred, and we were on a great track because we were thinking forward as to a Cascadia event. In the meantime, events happen all on their own that we're not necessarily prepared for. So as much as we can in emergency preparedness, not only at a government level, but also on an individual level, this one and many other natural disasters rely on your own preparedness level. You need to have 2 weeks worth of resources, food, something to keep you warm. You know, we need to take individual responsibility and keep ourselves 2 weeks prepared for any natural disaster. And in the meantime, make sure that the continual ongoing conversation in our communities, from the household level to the local community level to the local government level and on up.
Janine.
I couldn't agree more with those sentiments. We're going to need all of those layers of emergency preparedness, the personal, the community level, the check on your neighbors, and then the broader infrastructure communications restoration process that the government agencies are responsible for. I would say that, you know, one thing we learned, that the value of relationships ahead of the disaster are critically important. You don't want to be getting to know the person you need the most right in the middle of a disaster. You want to have that relationship built ahead of time. So that networking and collaboration needs to be happening now. And lastly, I just say that our recovery investments have to think beyond just roads and infrastructure and communications. We have to be investing in green infrastructure, because these natural processes are our first layer of protection, and they create so many broad benefits, the social, the environmental, the jobs, the economic. So I'd like us to really be thinking about how to have a natural and resilient environment so we can withstand these disasters in the future a little bit better.
And Tim.
So I'll just follow up a little bit on what Janine said last, and that is, our greatest comparative advantage for people that live there and people that come there and businesses that are there is our natural environment. And its restoration and its ability to come back is critical for the community, for the economy, and for the state, because they can't be separated. And I live there because I love the river, and I live there because I love the trails, and I live there because I can exercise on the pass, and our outdoor recreational opportunities are second to none if you're not counting ski resorts. Then I want to go back to briefly the question of local. As some of you may know, I've been involved in local activities and local government for decades, and I've never really looked anywhere else at the state level or the regional level, because it's always been my belief, and I still strongly believe it, that the local level is where services are delivered at, on, above, and below the streets. Imagine what life would be like if you didn't have a local sewer district, for example. So that I think is essential, not just in the terms of services that are needed, but they're also essential in the terms of communities helping one another. Janine mentioned the relationships. Part of the reason that we fared so well in this disaster is because people know people and people care about people, regardless of the political perspectives. So that's very helpful. Finally, I want to go back just a moment to Mary's questions. One, yes, there are issues of permitting, but I'd say the county is trying to address those in a couple of ways. They've hired three additional plan checkers for in the building and permit department with a priority for the Holiday Farm recovery. And they, as Heather mentioned, they've hired three additional planners to help people get through the process. In the terms of can they build back where they were, that they were grandfathered in essentially because they built before land use codes or Senate Bill 100 is passed. Yes, they can if they build in the same footprint and build within a certain period of time. The county's determined that if they build within a year, get a permit and get one inspection, they can go forward from there. It doesn't need to be turnkey completed for that to accommodate the rebuild. That's primarily in the riparian areas or close to the river. Senator Prezansky and others are working to try and extend that rebuild period by a year or two, which will make a big difference. So people want to rebuild, people will rebuild, and even though they don't live 40 miles up a gravel road, they probably have the same perspective. So thank you.
Thank you all very much for joining us today, and especially to our speakers, Commissioner Heather Buck, Tim Lowey from McKinsey Community Development Corporation, and Janine Parisi from Eugene Water and Electric Board.
This has been our January 29th, 2021 program. After the Holiday Farm Fire, what does it mean to rebuild? Before we proceed, I'd like to recognize our Diamond sponsors. Kaiser Permanente exists to provide high-quality, affordable healthcare services and to improve the health of our members and the communities we serve. More information at www.kp.org. Support comes from the University of Oregon. Since 1876, UO has helped Oregonians question critically, think logically, reason effectively, communicate clearly, act creatively, and live ethically. More information at uoregon.edu. Peace Health is proud to serve Eugene, Lane County, and beyond. As your hometown healthcare partner for more than 80 years, our mission is to keep you and your family healthy. Learn more at peacehealth.org. Lane Community College transforms lives through learning. LCC provides comprehensive, accessible, high-quality educational opportunities that promote student success. For more information, visit lanecc.edu. I would like to also acknowledge our gold sponsors, Homes for Good Housing Agency, Emergency Veterinary Hospital, and Evans Elder Brown and Subert, and our Sapphire sponsor, Summit Bank, your local community bank. An independent community bank headquartered in Eugene, Summit Bank serves businesses and professionals in Eugene, Springfield, and Central Oregon communities. For more information, visit sbko.bank. Before we thank our speakers today, there are a few more quick announcements. Thank you to our in-kind sponsors, KRVM 91.9 Radio, Pack Info and Simplified Computing, LLC, Dot Dotson's Photography, and a special thank you to public radio station KLCC FM 89.7 for airing City Club programs on Mondays at 7 p.m. Our programs are always available on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook page. Next week, we will present a program asking the question, missing middle housing. What is it? Why do we need it? How do we get it? This City Club program is the first in a three-part series on local housing issues. More details and information about future programs can be found online at the City Club's newly designed website, cityclubofeugene.org. Now, I would like to thank today's speakers for a great program. Commissioner Heather Buck, Tim Lowey, and Janine Parisi, thank you for a great program. This concludes today's forum. Be well and stay safe.